Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. My guest today is Cameron Romeril, the founder and CEO of Soda Press Company, who create organic soda, cocktail and mixer syrups. Cameron left his successful career in advertising and set up the business after realising his passion for the ethics and origin of food. He saw a gap in the market for a healthier version of soda machine syrup that wasn't made with artificial ingredients and that was full of sugar. So with his background in marketing and product development, Cameron started experimenting and making fruit syrups from his kitchen using natural, non-processed local fruit to create soda syrups. Cam started looking into the market opportunity, talking to industry experts, SodaStream users and retailers, and in 2013 he made the leap to start the business. Soda Press Company has now spread beyond Australia to 19 countries, and all their products are end-to-end plastic-free, organic, and manufactured right here in Australia. They're also big on sustainability, with just one bottle of Soda Press making up to 16 drinks, helping to reduce the number of single-use plastics. I love that one. I want to ask Cameron about where did he get his passion to drive him to make this business decision. Where did the passion come from? Whereabouts from his family? What about his growing up in New Zealand? Where did this passion for provenance, cleanliness, health-based products, sustainable products, where did all that stuff come from, and how did he use that passion to drive into this business? And how did he deal with things like COVID? What effect did COVID have once he'd already set up this business? And how important is taste, and how does he maintain that taste as a sustainable, consistent position in the marketplace? So let's get into it. Cameron Romeril, welcome to The Mentor, mate.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Righto. So I detect a New Zealand accent.
A little bit. Yeah. 12 years, I can't quite shake it off.
No? And then whereabouts in New Zealand are you from?
Grew up in Christchurch, but I've, like most New Zealanders, lived all over the place, been a small island.
Yeah, yeah. I actually like Christchurch. Unfortunately, they had the drama there, but like, it is a cool place. When I owned the wizard business, we had an office in Christchurch. We had one in Dunedin. We had a couple in Auckland. We had we had 24 across New Zealand. I used to go there quite a bit. I quite liked it.
It's a nice gateway to the ski fields. You can go north and south.
Yeah, it's and I guess it's a good place to grow up.
It is, actually, because you get a bit of a city feel, but you've also got, you know, the countryside, stone's throw away, right, and the mountains and the sea. So you get a lot of the good stuff.
One of the senses I get from New Zealand is, I don't want to, it sounds a bit weird, but like a purity, like a cleanliness. Like you guys have dealt with, New Zealand, you're Australian now, but New Zealand's dealt with the coronavirus probably better than anyone in the world. They're probably the gold standard in some respects. Australia's not far off, but New Zealand being a small island, remote to everywhere else in the world, we think Australia's a long way, and New Zealand's even further. And as a result of that, there's certain things that come out of New Zealand, well, there's certain things that New Zealand can export which all of a sudden become important. Cleanliness, provenance, you know, maybe organics it's a broad word, but organics, et cetera. So growing up in New Zealand, were you aware of that?
I was probably more aware when I actually started to travel, and I've done, luckily, fortuitously, quite expansively. And I think when you travel, you start to see, hey, things are compromised and this is not fresh and this is not like I had it back at home. So I guess growing up, it's not the organic side of things is not necessarily drilled into you. It's just there. It's present. So it's when you go abroad, you realize kind of how lucky you are and how food, its authenticity, its origins is comes from a good place. And I think now, as you mentioned, as the consumer's attitude starts to change towards food and beverages, they're starting to seek that authenticity out, and that's where New Zealand's in a good place.
Well, I mean, like when I was a kid, Australia was remote, like New Zealand, and actually all we wanted to do was travel overseas because we thought we don't have anything here that anybody else wants, and all I wanted to do was get to, you know, London and New York and LA and various other places to see the real big city life and the global international life. And it seemed to me like everything that everybody else had was bigger and better and more important and more fun and more exportable than anything we had here in Sydney. It was probably even more magnified when you're in New Zealand, you know, because, you know, all the jokes go around about New Zealand and turn the lights out, last person out, all that sort of stuff. And it's funny how the world has changed. I was not aware of the importance. I know when honey gets exported from Australia to China, they love our honey, our wines. They love it because of the, I guess there's a whole series of things, but cleanliness, you can trace where the things come from, and you can actually go and have a look what's in the ground and make sure it's not full of arsenic or shit like that. It's going to make you sick.
Exactly.
There seems to be a new move, or maybe in the last 10 years, a move towards clean. And, environmentally friendly, non-wastage, price consciousness, of course, but the rising middle class globally, particularly in the two biggest countries like India and China, have driven this demand. It's become a big deal now. New Zealand is, for me, even more magnified in that regard. New Zealand doesn't have that much to export. It's got good lamb and probably got good dairy products, et cetera, but it got a good football team, but generally speaking, it probably never struck me as having anything particularly exportable. But all of a sudden, there's an exportable concept. I mean, the concept of
it's a brand,
it's
in
clean,
itself.
It's a brand New Zealand or brand Australia. Brand New Zealand, I think, is probably even more so that way. And it's all only because of one thing: as Australians, the sense that Australia has of health. And a good ecosystem in terms of health. And, this whole discussion today is about that with your business, but I want to try and find the origins of that.
Yeah.
And, in New Zealand, as I said, it has less infrastructure, but it certainly is, if I was to pick, they're probably one of the cleanest places in the world. I probably would say New Zealand would be up there close to it.
Yeah, and the OECD, you're probably right, yeah, for sure. And I think they're harnessing that now, right? There's a lot of environmental protection and general public awareness and acceptance that we do need to look after what we've got.
But where do you get it from? Like, I'm trying to get to the bottom of where you got this concept of this is something exportable. Because, I mean, your business is going to do well if you can make this a global product.
Yeah, exactly.
So to be a global product, I mean, there's lots of people have products which are tasty and, you know, don't have chemicals and shit like that, and I'm sure there's lots of competition out there. But the one thing they don't have is that New Zealand sign attached to it or that Australian sign attached to it. Those two things are really important.
Yep.
Where did you get this idea from? Is it a recent idea, or were you always thinking of this? Were you brought up this way? Were you brought up somewhere where they're like, there's a brook running out in front of your house and your mum go down there and wash the clothes on a rock and, you know, or did you grow up in the middle of Auckland, or you're from South Auckland? You don't look Maori to me.
No. So I grew up in Christchurch, middle-class family. My father was a wool buyer and started his own business from scratch. And I remember as a kid going out on the wool truck and going out to the farms and, you know, buying wool. And I used to absolutely, you know, wake up in the morning, just jump out of bed and couldn't wait to go. And this was during obviously primary school holidays. And I've always had that love for the land and the cleanliness and the mountains and things like that. And I think that's growing up with me. I also had a mum that was an amazing chef, cook, what do you want to say? And she taught me a lot in the kitchen as well. So I've kind of from a young age grown up with, that influence.
That's an interesting point. Because part of the concept of what your business is, and we'll talk about later, but part of it is it's sort of like a little bit of magic, like it's brewing. It's nearly like concoctions to some extent. I mean, it's kitchen-based creativity, and you have to have got that from somewhere. I mean, like, it's nearly elixir style.
It is. It's funny.
Is that your mum as a cook, or where does that come from?
I guess having that that influence was good. I would never pass myself off as a chef, either in amateur or professional sense, but I am inquisitive. And it's funny enough, to kind of answer your question in a long way, how did I get to this point, was I've always been a hard worker, but I went down the road of in advertising right from when I left university. And I enjoyed that because it was challenging. It took me places globally, and you can travel, and you can pick your skill set up and move to a different country. And I love just working on brands. I love brands and seeing different businesses and how they work and trying to fix solutions and seeing opportunities. And I enjoyed that. And I guess I got to a certain age where you either burn out or you go to the top like Kevin Roberts or someone like that. But I'm certainly not of that caliber. And I guess the time was right. I actually purchased a property up in Avalon. And
where, Avalon?
Yeah, Avalon. So I moved from Bondi to Avalon. It was, you had to do the 6 month stint, right, to get the claim back all the benefits. This was during the global financial crisis when the government was giving leeway to first home buyers. And I only planned to spend 6 months up there and spent a year. It was a really good point of reflection in life, and enjoyed it, got into fitness and health and the beach and everything else. And I started to look around for new opportunities, and said, I feel like the time is right to move away from advertising. And I said, well, what are the things that you love in life? And it goes back to your point before. I love authenticity of food and its origins, and creating things. And I said, well, advertising's fine, but you don't have anything tangible at the end of it. And isn't my true passion? Probably not. And then I started to look around in the food industry, and it's obviously the craft movement was in full swing. This is going back to 2013. Organics, maybe less so. It was really just the advent of organic products coming to the market. And, you know, I can remember looking back now and looking how many organic products are on the market now. It's like tenfold to what it was back then. So it's like, what sort of area could I move into? And I used to, well, I still do. And I grew up with my grandmother with a soda stream. And I can remember as a kid having flavored drinks and stuff like that. But when I looked around, there wasn't really anything that I liked or was organic or didn't really have that authenticity I was after. If I wanted something that was raspberry mint, I wanted it to taste like real raspberries and real mint. And there's literally nothing on the market. So I started to play around in the kitchen, very small kitchen in a studio apartment. But I persevered and made a few of the original syrups. But the concept essentially was born then. And then I started to engage with a couple of key food scientists from friends of friends that had started up businesses. And then I had my first couple of trial flavors, and then tried them on a few other friends and people, community trade fairs and stuff like that. And it was the really positive feedback. And so it just grew from there. And I then eventually made the big decision, right, which is the hardest one in starting a business.
Well, I don't want you to talk about it just yet, because we've got people listening, they're thinking to themselves, they're always getting told, you know, like a lot of people like to start up something. You know, they're working like you. They might be in advertising, might be working for the government, whatever. And they've got this thing in the back of the itch saying to them, well, go and work for yourself. And, of course, you know, the answer that everybody gives to them, people like me give to them, whatever, they read stuff on Instagram, or, you know, you've got to be passionate about something, okay? And they don't quite really know what that means. You know, they think the passion is about making money or just owning a business. I'm passionate about owning a business. But you've got to be passionate about the product. I mean, I think that's what it is. And if I'm trying to break this down for them using you as a proxy for how this stuff works. And passion about what you do, I mean, your Soda Press is a business that makes syrups that are healthy. We'll talk about the ingredients and how it all works. But syrups, effectively, they can go into a soda stream that people can drink. Okay, it's obviously, it's got to be tasty. It's got to be, you want it to be healthy. You want it to be organic, et cetera. But there are elements. But you've become passionate about that. But really what your business is about is appealing to the senses of us consumers about concoctions, elixirs, brewing something, not in a mass production sense. So it's like you're nearly sitting there. I can imagine you sitting there. This is not true, but I imagine you sitting with a big, long broom handle that's nice and clean, brand new and fresh, but sort of stirring this massive pot in like it'd be great if it was some cave somewhere, but like stirring it and then putting it into bottles and then putting a cap on it, you know, with your hand and cleaning the cap and putting it aside and making box and box of this stuff. And that I'm trying to work out for those people listening to this, where's that come from? And what's interesting is you talked about your mum being a chef and cooking in the kitchen. to some extent, when a kid watches their mum, that's what their mum's doing. They don't realise mum's a chef.
Mm.
They see mum making what they know deep down is going to help them grow and is nutritional and helps build the bond between mum and me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of what you're seeing. You don't analyse the ingredients. You're not sitting there saying, well, she put in a half a kilo of this and 10 grams of that in.
Yeah.
You're not looking at that shit. You're just looking at the outcome, right?
Yep.
And the outcome is nutrition, loving, caring, good for me, bond, okay? Bonding. Mother, son, in your case.
Yep.
And then on the other side, you've got your dad, nature. Yep. And you got, he's out there. I mean, one of New Zealand's biggest exports, wool.
Yes.
You know, like, so, and it's clean wool. It's good, high quality wool. It's clean wool. And you're out there seeing that. So those two experiences help build what might be an underlying passion. And that's what I'm trying to get to the audience. Yeah. This underlying passion, there is an underlying passion, and well, some of us don't get it because, you know, we might not have experienced anything in our lives. And unfortunately, you have to develop one then.
Yeah.
But you, in your case, and a lot of people's cases, there is an underlying passion that sits in us,
mm-hmm.
but we have to sit back and examine it. And, you know, we don't need to go and see psychologists to do it. We just need to listen to this and think, what is it? And those two things are big influences on you. Your dad and the feeling of wool. I mean, as a wool buyer, you have to touch it, look at it, smell it. I don't know what you got to do to it, but there's a whole lot of stuff they've got to do. You no doubt would have
pressed lots of bales and crushed eggs and, yep.
And you participate in this stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You saw it as a young boy and you loved it. Yep. It was cool. It's something that appealed to you.
Yep.
And then you got, and it's funny, you said to me, you have a memory of your mum in the kitchen, brewing something, concocting something for the family that's going to make them all nice and healthy and keep everybody happy together. And to some extent, you brought that together in your own product.
Correct,
I mean, when you're in advertising, the skill you get at advertising, a hard skill, teaches you how to market it. I see your bottles here and it looks nice and, you know, that's how you package your shit up, okay? That's advertising is about packaging other people's brand or other people's passion up.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, I just get it. I want to get – everybody's listening to this. That's what advertising does, advertisers do. They package up what it is you're passionate about.
Yep.
They pull it all together and they turn it into a bottle with a tag on it, a logo and a tag and a wrapping, and they make sure that it gets marketed out to the market, gets put out in the marketplace. That's what advertisers do. But they don't do what you do in the beginning, that is actually cobble together all those things that you've experienced and put it into a product. And that's what I want people to understand. I want the audience to understand that's one way you can find out about what you would be good at. What's
so
important here in your case, Cameron, is you actually built some skills around through the advertising game to be able to do the shit for yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but of course, you had to learn how to manufacture. You've had to learn where to get the bottles from. There's a whole industrial business sits behind this too. That's where your advertising experience that hasn't helped you one bit. You've had to go and learn all that shit by the hard way.
It was a collision of two worlds. You're right.
Totally different worlds too.
Yeah.
So we have our soft skills. It comes from experiences with our family growing up. And the environment within which we grew up. Then we have our hard skills, what you did as an advertiser, which is very important. You've got to have some hard skills. It wouldn't matter if you're an advertising guy, or you could have been working fast moving consumer goods, like putting stuff on shelves, or you might have been an engineer and worked out, you might know how to engineer this stuff. But that's just one hard skill you could have used. But somewhere along the line, that's what I want to talk to you about now. Somewhere along the line, you said, I'm going to go for this.
Yep.
Now, what was that moment? You said that, you know, you got to a point in your life at a certain age, you've been advertising, can't do this for the rest of your life, otherwise you're going to burn out. Got that. But what was the moment where you're sitting down, and where were you? Were you sitting down? Was it at Avalon? You sitting down and you said, oh, I reckon I can do this shit?
Yeah, I'm trying to pinpoint a eureka in the sort of moment. I think it kind of, the feeling grew, and it was a transition probably over a week. And I think it's, you know, talking to people, talking to yourself. Is this something that is possible? And I think you've got to grab to build the catalyst to do it. It's a combination of things. It's your own sort of belief, and it's also talking to other people. You know, this is what I'm thinking of. What do you think?
You need affirmation.
Yeah, a little bit of affirmation, but it does help you sort of guide.
So who did you try it out on? Because I'm by the way, every person who comes in here who's started a business has tried things out on family, friends.
Exactly.
Every person.
That's exactly who it starts with, family and friends, and then. Friends of friends that might have a little bit of expertise in this area, then those friends, and then you slowly, you know, you have to pull favors from people, right, when you're starting out.
That's called market research. You're saying, does it taste right?
Yes.
And other people might be something, does it work okay? It could be some other thing. But
the acid test was really when we got those prototypes done and we went to the Avalon Food Market, and then you actually are trying it on.
In an open
unfiltered
market.
Customer feedback. And,
And
people don't.
It's not your cheer squad.
No, and people don't hold back. You can read their faces whether they say it or not, whether they like
it. So, what did you do? Did you put up a little stand or something?
Yeah.
This is like a big boy's version of a lemonade stand.
It is exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you have to do it. You really have to go through that first.
What did you do? Take notes? Would you say try this?
I was totally logged in my head. And yes, every word was, you know, still remembered till today. And I think on that point, you know, I think some of the feedback I got originally, and it's true to this day, and that's what we try and stay true to, is, oh my God, it actually tastes like, as we said before, like raspberries. I taste the pink grapefruit. It feels like you just squeezed it. And that is the point of difference that we've got in the market. And that's one of the big challenges as you scale up. How do you keep to your brand or your product authenticity and not fall into the trap of what often happens, which is, you keep taking things out of it to make it cheaper, and that's something we're not doing. We actually do the opposite.
Because pricing is an important thing later. We'll talk about that. But so there may not have been a eureka moment, so to speak, but it was more a build-up of affirmations and market research, which you got to a point where you're earning money at an advertising agency. They pay you every week.
Yes.
And then you've gone, oh, hang on, I'm going to throw that in. I'm going to put in whatever I've saved into this new venture. Did that happen, or did you keep the advertising thing going?
No. Yeah. I was actually a friend of mine. I tried to, I said, I've got this idea, because it's a lonely place setting up a small business. Yeah. As you all know, you would have talked to a lot of people in the same space. It is incredibly isolating, and you want to kind of grab people and pull them onto the boat with you. You know what I mean? As you sail off. But, this particular person said, look, you know, I'm willing to do it, but I want to still work in my job at the same time. And I knew you can't do both.
You're trying to get this person to come in to venture with you.
Yeah. He said, look, I'll do it. Well, let's build it to get it to a place until it's big enough, and then we'll ditch our jobs. Having read a few books and talked to a few people and knowing it myself, having most of my family have started businesses themselves, and they said, you just can't. You can't do two things. You've got it's 100% focus when you're starting out. It's the hardest part is that starting up.
So where was the crossover period? Like, where did you say, okay, I've got something here that's a business. I now know I can make a few bob out of it, but I'm going to have to give up my advertising job.
Yeah, I can remember sitting at home one night in the evening, and it was a decision made in my head. Like, this is going to work.
Yep.
You have to believe in it. And I made that decision. I said, I'm going with this. I have to let go of everything else. I can't lament. Can't think about the other job. I've got enough money to keep. It's not a big parcel of money, but it's enough to keep me going for 6 or 7 months while I get the first products out. And this is what I'm going to do. And it's just from then on, and it's just pure focus.
How did you feel? Did you feel
incredibly nervous? Petrified?
Yeah. Well, you know, because I often say to people, by the way, unless you feel a bit nervous about something like this when you're in business, it's not a good idea. What I mean by that is, it should be so exciting.
Yeah,
it's got to be a bit of an edge to it. There's got to be a bit of risk associated with it. Otherwise, if there's no risk associated with it, it's probably not that great a business.
So if I was thinking about this the other day, actually, there's a combination. It's a lot of feelings at the same time. So there's this euphoria of, wow, this is a massive transition. It's like, you know, what will this be? And this, you have this vision in your head where you can take this, and you have to have those global, those big aspirations. Otherwise, you're not just doing it to pay the rent, right? And as you say, there's an inertia element to it, and a fear and excitement. There's lots and lots of things, but I think the cumulative effect of all of that is just this feeling, this movement of energy, and you got to channel it in a positive way in the right direction. And that's one of the hardest.
And it can be overwhelming. So all those feelings coming into, as you said, like coming to your chest and hopefully end up in your brain, but they can come in your chest, and sometimes you can feel like you're going to lose your breath, or you're going to have a panic attack, or you're going to have a heart attack. You're about to make a big decision, leave your advertising job. You're about to make a big decision to go on a new business, and you're going to give yourself 6 months to get it up and running. You feel excited. You've got all these emotions going on, and I think everyone needs to hear this. When you're doing something like this, you've got to be selfish or more self-centered. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in a way that will make the business work. You've got to sort of do everything for yourself that will make you succeed in what you do. In other words, you've got to eliminate all those things from your life that are going to take away from you being successful.
Exactly.
Otherwise, there's no point taking the risk because it's just dumb. And because you can't do both. Like you said earlier, you can't do either. You can't work in your advertising job and do this, you know, your new business venture. That's the deal.
Mm.
And then how do I dig back into my past and find out what I think I'm going to be really good at? And I'm only going to be good at things I really enjoy, and I only enjoy things I'm really passionate about. What are the experiences that I've seen or that I really want to carry forward? And you nailed it. You said your dad is a wool buyer and your mum is a cook. You took the best out of those two and turned it into Soda Press Co. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's pretty fair indeed, yeah.
Why don't we go to the break? We'll come straight back. Let's talk about this business. Let's talk about how you manufacture this shit. You know, where's it all made, et cetera, et cetera, and who are you exporting to?
Right.
Okay, I'm back here from the break, and I'm here with Cameron Romerill, and we're talking about Soda Press Co. And Cameron, I'm looking at you brought six bottles of Soda Press product in. Why don't you just take me through the six bottles? Is this the full range or
no, it's
this just
part half of the range?
So explain to me or our listeners what have we got here.
Okay, so our range is split into two. We've got the original organic low sugar. So it was a battle to get low sugar without using things like stevia or artificial flavors and things like that. So we work with some.
But it's a syrup. It's
concentrate. Yeah. So it's a concentrate. Yeah. There's a 1-6 ratio. And it's
1-6 ratio, I mean?
Syrup to water.
Right.
Sparkling water, ideally. So they were designed and are designed to be used with sparkling water and ideally with SodaStream.
Yep. SodaStream is your partner or your joint venture organization or whatever is your preferred.
Yeah. About 2 years ago, we formed a business relationship.
Yep.
On a global scale.
Yep.
So that was.
Because that helps them sell their SodaStream and it also helps you sell your syrups.
Exactly. It puts us in the better for you and craft segment of their flavor portfolio.
Right, so just take me through. So organic soda syrups, what are we talking about? What does that mean?
The founding principles of why I wanted to do this was two things, was to make a product that tasted amazing but was also authentic in terms of where it came from, its origin. So again, I mentioned that before about if I'm going to make a raspberry mint, we have to put raspberry and mint.
Okay, well, let's talk. Is that raspberry mint there?
Yep.
All right, so you got raspberry mint syrup. Tell me where it comes from. Talk to me about the process.
So we're certified organic. So there is already in the principles of organic certification, there are codes and ethics all the way through from the farm gate to processing.
So you source all this. Do you actually sort of buy the raspberries and the mint?
Yes. Exactly.
And then you crush it or whatever you've got to do. We'll go through it in a second. But is it like where from? Where do you buy from?
Most of our comes from a combination of Australia, South America and Europe.
Right,
the key ones as well.
Right, so and you buy stuff that has an organic tag on it.
Yeah, correct.
By whoever the authorities are.
Correct.
Yep. And you import it or you bring it to your factory here.
That ensures that there was no chemicals involved. There's no GMO products involved at any stage. That there wasn't child labour involved. All those sorts of ethics.
So it's ethically clean as well.
Yeah. And the other part with too is that we obviously use a glass bottle. That's we now make our bottles in Australia instead of China. Made out of recycled glass, recycled aluminium. Obviously, the bottle can be recycled again. Partnership with SodaStream means that you're saving bottles because it's, when you think about it, it's a crazy concept that you buy something from a shop,
you throw the bottle out.
You drive it home, you put it in the fridge, you get it out a day later, you drink it in 5 minutes, then you throw it into the rubbish bin, and it goes all the way. Like the carbon footprint of that is off the planet, and also what you pay for that is three times more. Four times more in most situations.
But what about the effort?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things we probably grandchildren look back on and laugh at. Like you used to go and buy like single-use plastic bottles from the supermarket and then you used to throw it into the rubbish. It's like something that blows their mind away. So that's why SodaStream is growing at ridiculous levels globally because it makes sense, both for the environment, for your wallet, and for your health. So.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm going back. Sorry, I get so passionate, I get sidetracked.
So just give me, talking about the Raspberry Mint one.
The Raspberry Mint, yeah. So we, everything that goes into that is organic.
But how do you make, how do you get the syrup out of Raspberry Mint? Like, tell me.
They have to be crushed.
Yeah. So you crush it.
And then steeped at a certain level. Yep. So we take, as we're kind of a contradiction, because we're the best of the old world, and we used innovations as the best of the new world. So we're not neither in the old world or just in the new world. So we try and make things as healthy as possible, and that taste is as good as they can possibly get, given the constraints that we've got.
So it's not, but can I just say this as an observation? It's not so much it's healthy, it's not unhealthy.
Correct, yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's not a health drink.
It's
got no shit in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, and it tastes good.
Yeah.
And it tastes authentic. Good, authentic, and it's got no unhealthy shit in it.
So I think Jamie Oliver set the benchmark globally a few years ago, which is called the safe sugar zone. So the pendulum was full sugar, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, 12 grams of sugar per 100 mils. And then early 90s, early 2000s, you know, they swung the other way and it was completely sugar-free, but they were using a whole lot of synthetic sweeteners that have scientifically been proven not to be good for your health.
So what do you use to sweeten it?
So we use a tri-sugar combination. So we use monk fruit. Not many people know about monk fruit.
Never heard of it, yeah.
So the reason it's called monk fruit is over 2,000 years ago, it was used by the Indo-Chinese monks to treat illnesses, and they also used it in cooking as well. But the good news is it actually has health benefits. So we use a combination of monk fruit, organic brown rice syrup, it's got a low GI, and also organic sugar. So net combination of sugars in our syrups is around about 4.5 grams per 100, which is around about 50% less than if you bought a standard soda off the shelf. In our kombucha range, it's under 1 gram of sugar.
Yep.
The other reason why we can use less sugar is because of the authenticity of what actually goes in there. When you use real grapefruit and you use we use wildly picked elderflower, you know, things like that, and you actually use those real ingredients, the flavor's there. Often sugar, salt, and other sodiums and things like that are used to mask what you're not putting in, make it taste good.
Yep.
Just trigger those things, the salts, the sugars, and other things. And that's what a lot of products do, right? They kind of trick your brain to think, oh, this tastes good.
Yeah, but it's not really elderflower. It's when more
you
eat, sugar.
Yeah, exactly. Salt. When you put the real things in, you can taste the elderflower and the mint. You don't have to put as much sugar in.
It's like chips, so you don't really taste a potato.
Yeah, yeah. It's oil and salt, right?
Fat and salt.
yeah, exactly.
So it's a trick. I get that. So you import some of your products. You source some of your products locally. It's organic. Your sugar profile is some combination of various other types of sugars or products that have sugar in them.
Yep.
But ultimately, there's less sugar. There's less carbs.
Yep.
And less sugar. Yep.
Less calories.
Yep. Per bottle of this relative to what you would get if you bought one from the shop, so to speak. So you put yourself in a relative position in terms of carbs and calories, and then in terms of taste profile, how do you get the taste to be so authentic? I mean, like, I don't know, does raspberry and...
Hours of trial and error. It is hard. It's about, first and foremost, it's about finding the right suppliers. And you know that it's a certain quality.
Because a piece of mint from this place could taste different from the same piece of mint from the different another joint.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so it's about sourcing the product, which is sort of going to be difficult for you if you ever really want to get it on a massive scale, because you've got to find someone who can give you the same taste every time.
Yeah, so that's what we've started to do now, is partner with organisations that specialise in this area that can guarantee us that quality and supply.
Yeah.
So we've scaled up considerably now. Like, we'll do 2 million bottles into next year at least. And we have not had an issue with supply for about 4 years on any of our ingredients. So we're in a good space. But you're right, yeah, managing that, the scalability based on your inputs is obviously really important to us.
Yeah, I guess that's the same for everybody. That's why Coca-Cola just do what they do, because they know that it's scalable, because everything is sort of simplified in that it's give six grams of sugar or 70 grams, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, like you can scale it that way but now people have become a bit more discerning.
Yeah.
And but people are looking for this sort of product. Like, tell me about the kombucha. Like, I mean, that's a big thing at the moment, kombucha everywhere. Tell me about that. I didn't know you buy it in concentrate.
No, well, this is because it's a first. We've seen if anybody else is doing it. Nobody is. So we brew this here in Australia over 45-day period. So it's quite a long brew process. The fact that we keep it in a concentrate has some added benefits. Allows us longer shelf life. It allows the product to remain stable because we've put basically the good bacteria and the probiotics into a dormant state.
Just help a few people out here who might be listening who aren't used to kombucha.
Yep.
What are we talking about here? It's like a beer.
Yeah, kombucha is a fermented tea.
Yes, made from tea. Yeah.
So it's a fermented tea that has a combination of probiotics and other good bacteria that positively influence your gut flora and allows your body better enable your digestive system to absorb nutrients that otherwise may not be absorbed to that effect. The upside of that is obviously you feel better, potentially look better, and I guess hopefully what a lot of people claim is that your cognitive ability increases as well.
Yeah, does it taste all right though?
Yeah. It's the fastest growing beverage category last 5 years in a row. In fact, Australia and New Zealand have a prolific amount of kombucha brands that are now exported globally. So it's a good news story out of Australia.
Is that right? It's a bit of a phenomenon, kombucha out of Australia,
isn't it? It's huge in the States, kombucha. So we concentrate it, and it's got very high probiotic count, so it's over a billion per serve. I think the difference between our product and an RTD, which is we always try and trade off against an RTD,
what is that?
Ready to drink. So a single serve bottle. So it's whether we're talking a single serve soda or a single serve kombucha. So we're always trying to say, well, why would you do that when this is 1/10 the cost and it's got more probiotics in it?
Yep.
So that's where that's our, I guess, our selling position as well.
Well, cool, because it's kombucha. I have it because if I'm looking for a sweet drink, it's got low sugar, but also now it's good for me. I like the taste. So I just go, well, that's not a bad sweet drink to have.
Yeah.
You know, like generally.
So these are all natural flavours we put into that. So that's the passion fruit and mandarin.
I can smell it. I can smell the mandarin. No, I smell the passion fruit.
So, so this is our fastest growing range. So it's doing really well globally. And I guess now that we've got, you know, we own this territory.
But you need a soda stream. You got to have soda. Can you put it with just like water out of
tea? Yeah, you can, of course. Yep, definitely. Yep.
And it doesn't have to have soda, but
a lot of people drink kombucha just with.
It's sort of like cordial. I hate to say that word, but it's. I don't want to put it down, but it's a new version of cordial if you want it like that.
Yeah, it's kind of we've got like an evolution of cordial.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of people love cordial, having a cordial type product in the fridge. Yeah. Like if you just want, I don't like the taste, just water, okay? Yeah. I'm not a water drinker. Generally speaking, I need a taste in there, some sort of taste. And you know, for me, something like this would be perfect. You know, you could say, I feel like lemon and whatever, ginger or something. I would use this sort of stuff. I probably wouldn't go to the soda stream is a great idea. If my kids when they're young would love that's like a fizzy drink.
Yeah.
But I'd be quite happy just having a glass of water.
We do make things like, tonic, very high in quinine. So, if you're doing gin and tonics, so we do things like that as well. So we do adult drinks as well. But you mentioned the word cordial because that is quite interesting and it does have a stigma and a certain connotation to it. But I guess the perception of cordials is quite, and it is, if you look at cordials, they're quite high in sugar.
And also colour.
They use colourings and flavourings.
I guess what I'm sort of saying to you is that the cordial concept.
It is a concept.
It did take off here 40, 50 years ago. Because I remember the cordial truck used to drive down my street.
It's like milk crap.
Yeah, and everyone used to go, you know, get the cordials and you put it in your house and everyone in the family would be drinking a red cordial and green cordial.
we all grow up all right.
Yeah, totally. But I get it, the sugar. But this is a modern version. What I'm saying is you could use this as a cordial, so to speak.
Absolutely, if you want to. And also cocktails and mocktails and popsicles and slushies.
Yeah,
and
all those frozen things. Yeah. And I like the idea of it. But can I just ask you, in terms of the bottles, the design, I mean, this is where your advertising experience comes in, but the design of the bottles, I mean, why did you, what inspired you to design them like this?
That's a really good point.
It looks like medicine to me.
They were, the actual design and shape of this is 120 years old.
Yeah, it's an old school bottle. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually called a syrup bottle. And it was designed to originally have syrups. When they used to make it in the old days, with real, they used to crush, and that's where the name soda press came from, right? Because they used to have a fruit press, and they'd old wooden fruit press, and they'd turn it around, they'd throw all the berries in it, and you'd squeeze the berries, and you'd get this juice at the end. They would use an evaporation process to concentrate it, and then they'd bottle it up, right? Okay, and that's where syrup used to be made in the old days. So that's where I talked about before about how we try and use as much of that process as we can. And without using any preservatives, we use a special pasteurization process, so it has kills all the bad bacteria.
So you warm it up,
and so you can keep it on the shelf.
So you warm it up.
Yeah. But we don't. A lot of places do. We don't cook it. So
you know the difference.
Don't kill it. Yeah, if you cook it, it becomes a sauce, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we don't do. So it still has that.
You just warm it up.
You feel you can taste the fresh.
You warm it up like similar to the way you do with milk to pasteurize milk.
Exactly.
Yeah. So because that allows you to preserve some of the nutrients or the nutrients.
Yep.
Inside. So I get that. But and when I look at the bottle though, it looks medicinal. In other words, it's again that whole theme of it's good for you.
Very good point. So one is the we play on not play. It's a deliberate thing. So taking the best of the old and the new, right? So the bottle is our old school way of we do things. The brown glass. It was always designed to prevent sunlight going through. So that adds to the preservation of the product because we don't put preservative in it. Yep. So that helps on that side of things. So we think they aesthetically they look quite cute, right? They're something you can't – and it does stop people walking down there and picking up, this is different. We actually deliberately wanted to stand out.
Yep.
We deliberately wanted to look yesteryear kind of feel, but we had to have a contemporary feel as well, which is this – the branding and the colours and everything else.
In the tactile sense, I mean, it feels good. It's easy to hold. It sort of looks a little bit like the old VB bottle, which has still been around for a long time. But as I said, it's got a medicinal look without being medicine. I don't mean that in a bad way, negative way. And I like the fact that it's all recycled, which is cool. I think the your label, Soda Press Company, Organic Soda Syrup, Raspberry Mint, it says it all, 50% less sugar. That's what I want to know. And then it's got a thing around the side. It says certified organic, no artificial ingredients, 50% less sugar, gluten-free, non-GMO, vegan, no stevia. So tick, 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 has a tick next to all that. So I think the labelling is very good. I mean, obviously your advertising days have come in handy. It stands out to me. So where do you buy this stuff from? Is it only online or you buy it on shelves?
No, on the shelves. So
where are you distributing through?
So SodaStream globally now manage all our distribution.
Right.
Which is really handy, right?
Yeah.
It takes a lot of headache out of
scaling
up.
Yep.
So they're a perfect business partner.
So where do they retail from though?
Woolworths.
Oh, right.
They are Woolworths, Coles, Big W, all those big departments. And right through to David Jones to Meijer.
So you go into Woolworths and you'll see whatever it is, you see the SodaStream thing.
Yeah.
They're probably in a box or something, but then your stuff's all sitting below it next to it.
The largest retailer that we have here in Australia is Big W and like Harvey Norman's and places like that, and then all your organic stores and things like that.
Yeah. And so you buy one of these soda streams and you get one of the – you buy these as well.
Yeah, ideally, that's what we try and get people to do.
Yeah.
It depends on what people want. Some people are quite happy with – so now, you know, with, for instance, Pepsi – with SodaStream, you can get Pepsi flavors now. So I guess it's in any given family, someone might want a Pepsi product, someone might want a kombucha, someone might want the pink grapefruit to make one of their
martinis.
So if I want to
reorder, how do I get it? Yeah, you guys have a website.
Yeah, sodapressco.com.
Okay, so My reorder process is not through SodaStream, but it's through SodaStream.
You can choose either way.
And you pay the same price.
So we only have our own online presence in Australia and New Zealand. Globally, it's all through SodaStream.
So that sort of helps you on the marketing side of things, I guess, because distribution is about how you market these things and they're doing it for you. But what do you guys run
comms, socially? So we do all the development, all the comms and advertising ideas and stuff like that and filter that in through SodaStream. So
are you running separate social mediums?
We do, and again, in Australia and New Zealand.
Yep.
Most of our followers come from overseas. So Australia and New Zealand only represent 5% of our turnover.
Right.
95% is export.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's quite a...
Is that because SodaStream is much bigger overseas than it are here? Or is it just bigger markets?
Australia and New Zealand would be, I mean, the household penetration of SodaStream's up around sort of 15%, so it's quite high globally.
Oh, really? So who owns SodaStream?
SodaStream actually started a very long time, 1920s. And SodaStream was actually designed for the royal family so they can make gin and tonics. And I have to fetch, because the original soda bars, you actually had to go to a soda bar. So its origins are quite fascinating, actually, in terms of innovation and design. And it was obviously big during the 70s, Soda Club owned it, and then it was sold to an Israeli company who took it even further globally. And then Pepsi bought SodaStream about 2 years ago and have now taken it globally.
How did you go during the COVID period? Like, what was the effect of COVID on your business, like, say, let's say when you first heard about it in March?
Yeah, like everyone, it was like, whoa, no one was expecting this, and a little bit blindsided. We started to look at very quickly at research. So what had happened in previous pandemics, what had happened in global financial crises, and was there any evidence?
People love beer, love chocolate. And
all those things, exactly. Snacks, short, cheap thrills, alcohol and everything else.
Yep.
So we started to gear up very quickly to cope with the demand. Unfortunately, SodaStream had a bit of a different reaction. They kind of initially went, we better stop ordering because along with a lot of other manufacturers were like, we better not get overstocked. But it had the complete opposite effect. Like, demand was through the roof. So I think SodaStream hit their targets within 6 months of the pandemic, as people weren't allowed to go to the supermarket as often.
Hmm.
We're looking for value as well. And obviously convenience. Like, it's just so convenient.
Spoil yourself.
Exactly.
It's a cheap spoil.
Yeah. So for us, it was, in that respect, and where we had retail distribution, it was great because our sales in those retailers doubled, right? But on a global scale, it was a little bit frustrating because we were in some markets like the States and Canada and places like that, but we were in a rapid rollout, right? So we were going to trade fairs, and in fact, we were in LA in the largest natural food trade fair in North America, and it was in LA, and it was mid-March, right? We'd just finished setting up our stand and spent a lot of money going there. And then that night they cancelled the whole event.
Wow.
And then it was a scramble to get back home. And that was basically the start of COVID, this COVID shutdown. And we were one of the last flights to get back. So we got really hamstrung because we couldn't go to these trade fairs. The cogs of getting into distributors through SodaStream in those markets all stopped because you couldn't have meetings. They said, we're not taking anything new on. So our trajectory of rollout, which is, we were supposed to roll out this year in the States, 5,000 stores, right? And we got 1,000. But we'll pack up next year. But if COVID had come along a year later, we'd be laughing, right?
Yep.
But it came just a year too early. So even that, the reality is we ended up where we projected to be.
Yeah, because it caught up.
Yeah, exactly.
And some. Because, the psychology coming out of any bad turn like recessions, financial recessions, whatever it is, people always go and spoil themselves.
Yeah.
COVID was even more accentuated in terms of spoiling ourselves because we were at home. So we spoiled ourselves at home even more.
Yeah.
I mean, it was whatever we could do at home to make ourselves a bit happier, we do it, and cheap. It had to be efficient.
I'm still trying to run those extra kgs off.
You won't run it off. Well, it takes a while, but it was interesting. A lot of people actually panicked when COVID started, and then COVID actually was quite good to them.
Yeah,
in some respects. So, how's your business now?
It's really interesting. We post COVID, there was some mega trends that obviously have helped our success to this date going into COVID, right? Which was better for you, better for the planet. I want things, sustainability. The research that's come out of Mintel and all the other big research global organizations is that if I quote the figures accurately, it's 67 and 70% increase in positivity towards from consumers. So during COVID, we thought that things like sustainability would take a back seat for consumers, right? It'll be more about purse strings and value and all that kind of stuff. No, that consumers are almost twice as likely to buy products or for sustainability to be top of mind than it was going into COVID.
So where does this, do you remember where sustainability ranks in the mega
trends? Yeah. In terms of top of mind for consumers, it's health and wellness is up there.
Right.
So, and then value and then sustainability. And they're the three key triggers that our product is about.
Yeah.
But the other big one that came out of it was around about 70% up as well, which was health and wellness. So even coming out of COVID, so people are going to be more conscious of staying healthier. And they've obviously during COVID have learnt a lot of things that you and I probably already knew, but people didn't know that you had to keep your vitamin C up, that you had to not eat junk food, that you needed to think in the open.
And you had to keep your gut bacteria right.
If you had diabetes, you're three times more likely to suffer severe illness from COVID than
and
if
what
you
causes
weren't.
Diabetes?
Exactly.
Or what bad contributes eating. To what yeah, contributes sugar. To at least, yeah. So like I think that's right. I mean, I don't know. I haven't read any reports, but anecdotally, I think that's right. Some people are much more aware, much more conscious of their health relative to what might confront them. And I think also people are now and also aware of enjoying yourself. Yep. Like, you know, like you've got to
live in the moment, right?
Yeah, live in the moment a bit more. Like, and I think that your product, if you can tell people about it, if people become aware of it, that's the game. You've got to build awareness program, of what Soda Press is about.
Mm.
Where do I get this from? You know, how do I get it? And I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of it before. So wherever you're marketing this through, you haven't got to me yet. And I reckon I'm a fair example of what your customer might be.
Yep.
You know, I'm someone who would buy six of these. I mean, and put them in my cupboard. But I'm sort of a buyer, you know what I mean? Like, maybe you've got to work out how to get to me. I mean, I certainly haven't seen you on any of my socials and I just haven't seen you anywhere.
Yeah, we're already starting to gear up this year for Australia and New Zealand. So we did have quite a focus internationally and now we're up and planning. We can now pivot back around and focus on Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah. So we've run out of time. It's been fascinating. But what's one question you would like to ask? Because I don't want you to demonstrate when we do the promo how this thing works. But and I want to have a taste clearly. But what one thing you'd like to ask me? Because I've been asking all the questions. Eh?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges is for us, for me, for the next couple of years is rapid scale up, right? We're talking like, you know, by the end of 22, we'll be in 20 of the biggest markets globally. And I've got the right people in place now in those key positions. One of the things I find the hardest is two things is trying not to burn out, right? It's staying focused. And I probably look at 10 years older than I did a couple of years ago. But is keeping that, because I think it's really important that you do, we talked about it before about the focus.
Yep.
You can't run around doing 1,000 things at 1,000 miles an hour all the time. The human body and the mind only has so much capacity. And I think the second one is, and it's one of my greatest things is, you know, because I've been so close to this baby for so long, is actually giving it to daycare, right? Is handing those reins over and entrusting people to do the right thing with that thing. And I sometimes find that quite hard.
Yeah, well, on the first one, to me, everything's just tasks. So I look at everything in a certain way. I set my mind to say, these are my tasks today. So I never get overwhelmed. Occasionally, you know, fuck it, I don't feel like doing this. But like, I never get overwhelmed because I just say, well, these are my list of tasks I've got to do. They're just tasks. I've got 20 tasks and it's all been spaced out properly. I'd say, okay, that's what I've got to do. And I'll just like going to the gym, you're going to do 20 reps or you're going to do four sets of 20 reps. They're your tasks.
Yeah.
If you sit around there thinking about it before you go, oh, fuck, I've got to do it, you'll never do it.
Yeah.
So I just look at everything as a task. And if I don't get it all done, I get it all done. Simple. Yeah. I try my best, but that's it. I'm sort of very cold hard at it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Because, by the way, this is going to go on forever. It's not just this year, next year, 20, 30 years you'll be doing this. Because And you want to be doing this, by the way.
Yeah.
You don't want to be, I mean, I don't know. For me, I want to be Rupert Murdoch at 80 years of age. I want to still be able to go to work and still making decisions. And otherwise, because I don't want to be sitting around, I'm no interest whatsoever. I'm playing golf every day of the week and boring myself off my tits.
Oh, yeah.
Like I just don't want to do that. So if that's your mindset and it's just tasks and it's just what I'm setting myself for the next 20, 30 years, that's okay. Okay? Because it's just like going to the gym. You can't say, I'm just going to go to the gym today. You can say, no, to the day I die, I'm going to go to the gym. because I've got to keep exercising, yeah. I've got to keep moving. So that's the first one. And the second one in relation to putting your baby into daycare, letting the reins go, that's a hard one. Some people think that being passionate about your business is equal to the same as being emotional. For me, you've got to be emotionless. Your job in business is to raise your business as an independent thing of you. Yep. Otherwise, you don't have a good business. You're too attached.
Yeah.
You've got to detach. So you've got to be emotionless in relation to it. And by the way, if the person who you're handing the reins over to in relation to whatever it is, marketing, whatever it is, you've got to also be emotionless in relation to that individual. You've got to say, well, if that person doesn't do the right job, they've got to go.
Yep.
And you've got to replace them. And you've got to let them know that's how you feel. And you've got to set them their tasks, and you've got to set them guidelines, training, tasks, and, you know, performance hurdles. If you don't do this, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Like I actually did this in my own business only yesterday. I come up with a new KPI in relation to my business. I won't say what it is, but I said, guys, this particular thing has to be a new KPI. In other words, that means for them, if you don't achieve it, you're in trouble because otherwise I'm in trouble. And that's what I'm paying them for. And you're paying people to make sure that this business doesn't get into trouble. It's just like when you raise your kids, you're building your kid up so the kid doesn't get in any trouble.
Yep.
You know, they get and achieves the best they can.
Yep.
Just step back, be emotionless. I am totally emotionless. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't get angry. I mean, I get angry and things don't get done right, but I have to control myself. But but at the same time, if something does go wrong, I don't sweat on it. I just come up with a solution. And yeah, I think it's about putting those potential outcomes in front of all those people you hand things over to.
Yep.
If you're on board, this is what I expect. Make sure you let me know how it's going. They've got to communicate to you.
Yep.
You don't have to go find this shit out all the time. If there's something going wrong, you don't want to find it out. You want them to tell you.
Yep.
Tell me, am I going to hit my numbers? Am I going to hit my targets? Is there a problem? You must let me know well and as soon as you know.
Yep.
You've got to transfer the sweat over to them. They need to sweat it out overnight. And so I only employ people who are prepared to do that. And who think like proprietors. This comes down to your recruitment program. Don't employ people who don't think like proprietors. They've got to think like you. You're the proprietor, they've got to think like you.
Yeah.
They've got to think like it's their business. And that means they're going to do some sweating on this because you can't possibly do, you can't do every task.
No, not anymore.
You'll go mental. we can't, something will go wrong. You'll miss something, you forget something.
Yeah.
So you delegate, but you delegate to the people who think like proprietors. And you put it back on them and you set them out their targets and their KPIs and their goals and their objectives. And if they don't work out, they don't work out. Move them on. And it's a game. You know, you play rugby. You're in New Zealand. You must have played rugby.
Yep. Yep.
Sure. Every man in that team's got a job to do.
Yep.
In your business, every person in your job, male or female, has a job to do.
Yep.
And you're like the coach. You're not playing. You're not on the field. You're standing back and you're directing traffic.
Yeah.
And you're saying to people, if you don't work out as a flanker or whatever it is, you're going to have to move on. I'm going to get someone to replace you. And they've got to know that. And I reckon that's the only way to do it. Now, look at all the great – I mean, I'm more a rugby league guy, but if you look at the great coaches, they're completely emotionless about transfers, trade-ins.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, you could have a halfback who could be in rugby league, could be a great halfback, but this particular halfback doesn't suit – the forward pack, and it doesn't suit the rest of the back line.
Yeah.
And therefore it doesn't work in your team. You have to replace that person. And you've got to tell that person up front, like, mate, this is your job. This is the skill set I'm looking for. This is what I expect you to do. I want you to run to the line. I want you, whatever it is, you know, you defend a certain way. But this is what I expect for you. And if it doesn't work out, you, the coach, have to say, okay, it's not working out. We have to move you on. It's business. I mean, what worries me a little bit, you said you might be just using an example. You are sending him to daycare. I know you are in love with this business. You love this business. I know you do, which is great. Use that to drive the business, but don't let it control how you feel. Don't feel anything.
Good advice.
Act. Don't react. Act. Perform, like in a theatrical sense. When you are performing, it's just using theatre to get a point across.
Yeah.
But don't actually make – it can't – it's got to be like method acting. You can't actually feel that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to be able to, once that's over, you just got to turn the lights off and go home.
Yeah, switch off.
That's what I do. It took me a long time to work it out, but that's what I do.
Good advice. I appreciate that.
Thanks very much for coming in, Cameron. Let's do a demo. And we'll put the demo up in the promo.
Thanks, Mark.
softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.